From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 465, Cloud for ISPs with guest Barnaby Jeans. Recorded Wednesday, March 2nd, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Barnaby Jeans, and Barnaby is currently a technology strategist and with the hosting and cloud services team at Microsoft Canada. Barnaby's current focus is working with partners to help them build out new managed service offerings, leveraging both their own data center capacity as well as Microsoft's cloud services. Prior to his role, Barnaby has held a number of progressively senior roles at Microsoft, VMware, Red Hat, and Oracle. So full platform spread there. He brings his own broad background across IT infrastructure and architecture to all of his customer and partner interactions. In addition to his role at Microsoft, Barnaby currently sits in the technical advisory board of the Canadian IT Futures Conference and is a past board member for the Canadian Information Processing Society. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Richard. Happy to be here.
And we have known each other for many, many years. I'm kind of embarrassed. This is the first time you've been on the show.
I know. I've been waiting for something really good to talk about.
And I think we've got some fun stuff to talk about today, absolutely, in the space of what's happening to the ISP world. But I've got a comment off of the Run As Radio site I thought I'd read with you just to get you up to speed on this. We have a bit of a conversation about it.
Sure.
This is from show 461, the one I did with Janelle Crothers, when we talked about disaster recovery in the cloud, specifically the Azure Site Recovery product. And this is from Dave, who said, "Hi, site-to-site failover has always been a challenge I've been aiming at for work for about a half a year now. It's nice to know that there are tools like Azure Site Recovery, but there is a lot of work required to get to the stage where a failover can have that sort of tool even used. One of our aims is to do a monthly failover, as you've mentioned a few times on the show that you've done in bad weather zones." And this is from back in my youth, I guess. In the 90s, I built data centers in the Caribbean, and one of the things we did for on our failover strategies was hurricanes. So we set up like a facility in Bermuda and a facility in Cayman. They're both in the hurricane zone, but they're in different hurricane zones. And you never went through a year without switching between them at some point. Our weather in the UK is just a bit of rain, although you guys had some wicked flooding this past winter too. And we can have our good weather is rain as well. We have two colo spaces with near identical hardware in both locations. We'd love to get to the stage where we don't care about failover because it's just something we do. And running that monthly means that we could tie it in with our patching procedures. And Dave goes on to a bunch of specific challenges, which I addressed elsewhere. But I, you know, this is a fun thing to talk about because I've talked about the fact that I did routine failovers back in the 90s, but things are wildly different today, especially when you think about something like Azure Site Recovery, where this was a tool, Janelle really dug into this, that you can use to test your failover solutions as well without jeopardizing your production site in the process.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think some of the cool things that people don't realize with Azure Site Recovery or with any DR tool, in fact, one of the most overlooked components is the testing aspect of it. And what ASR does so beautifully is allows you to go through that test process as frequently as you want. But it also gives you the flexibility to say, if I've got my own data centers, we can work between data centers. If I've only got one environment of my own, great, let's back that up into the cloud. If I want to work with a service provider, I can work in that model as well.
Yeah, that choice either way. I have absolutely run into organizations that had two complete data centers, had built up all of the failover mechanisms, and were unwilling to test them because they could not afford to be down. And it's like, if we're wrong, then you know, we're going to be down. And I can't tolerate that. That's why we're building this in the first place. Like, if you never test it, I guarantee you, you're wrong.
The chances of getting that right the first time without testing it are pretty slim.
Almost essentially zero. So I could also see that you could, if I had two data centers, like I'm in the situation of Dave, I could loop Azure Site Recovery in as a bridge, break the dependency between my two data centers, run off one in production, sync it with ASR. Then when ASR says it's got it, activate a failover to the second site with ASR while the primary is still running the main load. and then check your backup site and say, okay, this is now working right. We have proof that it works. Like, that's the thing that I got most excited about with ASR is it didn't matter what mode you were in, like what environment you were with, you could actually test this effectively. Because all of my experience with companies that had enough money to run two data centers, we always knocked ourselves out of production at least once testing it. Like it happened.
Well, and I think the interesting part, you know, when you start to look at, especially in the small and medium business space, most of those customers don't have access to multiple data centers. They've either got their own small data center.
It's so expensive. It's just not possible.
But I think kind of the interesting part, and maybe the space that I play in is in the service provider space. And we're seeing a lot of interest from the service providers around Azure Site Recovery for a couple of reasons. One, they can start to offer it to be that DR site for the small business, and really offering that as a service. But it also allows them to protect their own assets and offer replication between their sites, or in some cases between their site and even up into Azure. So there's a fantastic conversation that's starting to happen with the service providers around this whole disaster recovery or business continuity as a service.
Well, I want to dive into the service provider side of this because I think this is really cool stuff. But let's let Dave wrap up here. Dave, thank you so much for your comment. A Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or on any of our social media. We post every show to LinkedIn, Google+, and Facebook. If you comment there, I read it on the show. I'll send you a mug. Are service providers still in business, Barnaby? I mean, isn't the cloud just taking this business out? Why would I run Exchange anywhere but at Azure?
Well, I think there's a couple of things to think about, right? Definitely there is this perception that, you know, these hyperscale players are impacting the service provider business or the hoster business. And I think you have to kind of look at it maybe a little bit more deeply. And while we do have great penetration with Microsoft Azure, and I would assume Amazon is seeing the same sort of thing around the world, there are still geographies and there are still workloads that aren't applicable to go into a public cloud provider.
Right.
You know, even in Canada, we can sort of look at the scenario we've been in for a number of years where while customers are very interested in the hyperscale players, there's still some trepidation around, do I move workloads into another country?
Right.
Certainly, Canadian service providers have been very successful in being able to deliver in-country data resident services to address those scenarios.
Now, that being said, I mean, Microsoft's now putting a data center, I think it's in Montreal. So.
Yeah, so Microsoft's opening two data centers in Canada. We've got one announced for Quebec City, and we have one announced in Toronto. So both of those things should be online a little bit later this calendar year, so a little bit later in 2016.
Cool.
But if we think about, you know, so what does that really mean for a hosting or a service provider? A couple of things. I mean, I think from a Microsoft standpoint, we've been very effective at being able to drive out a consistent platform across what we're doing in the public cloud, what we're offering to customers to run in their data center, and what we're offering to service providers to run in their data center. So if we come back to Dave's comment, you know, one of the interesting conversations is around, hey, I do have this workload. Potentially I'm running it myself, but I need a DR site. I need a DR location. And it may be more effective for me to do that DR location to a service provider, especially if I think about, you know, maybe an industry or geography that doesn't have great cross-country internet connectivity. So we've talked about our data centers being in Quebec City and in Toronto.
Right.
If I'm up in the oil patch somewhere, perhaps I don't have great connectivity.
Yeah, Northern Alberta or, you know, way further north into the Northwest Territories and stuff. Like, there's just not a lot of anything up there.
Correct. So now I start to look at, is there a service provider that's local to me that I can use as my DR site?
Right.
I can still take advantage of something like Azure Site Recovery to do the orchestration because, hey, the bulk of the data is just moving between my location and my service provider. It's more the control data that's really running through Azure Site Recovery, and the latency there is probably not as critical. So I think what's happening is there certainly is a bit of a shift in terms of thinking about what are the workloads that service providers want to offer. And part of where I'm spending my time is to work with service providers to say, hey, we need to move a little bit further up the stack. We need to move beyond just doing perhaps the infrastructure as a service or what essentially is becoming a very commoditized type play and start to look at these higher value services, backup as a service, disaster recovery as a service, things that, you know, are potentially difficult, complicated, or costly for the end customer to do on their own, but are things that are very, very effective if driven through a service provider. And we start to look at things like long-term data retention. if I'm a small business, do I want to invest in the facilities and the processes to manage data for the next 7 to 10 years for legal or regulatory requirements?
Sure we do. We put them in cardboard boxes and we stick them in a storage room until the tax man says we're allowed to destroy them.
Exactly. And as long as you don't have to go find them, that theory works really well.
Well, you never want to make an audit that easy.
Exactly. So we start to look at, you know, how can service providers deliver some of those same types of scenarios? And in some cases, it means they deliver it out of their data centers. But what we're also seeing, and especially what I'm working on, is something we call our Cloud Solution Provider Program. And this is a program that we make available to partners that allows our service provider partners to build out their own solution sets that encompass and include capabilities and components from Microsoft first-party cloud services. So effectively reselling some of the Microsoft solutions. So whether it is an email scenario, right? You made the comment earlier about why run Exchange yourself? Fantastic point. But the second question is, well, if I'm an end customer, do I want to go direct to Microsoft and still have to deal with the day-to-day administration of adding users and making sure I've got the right policies and DNS entries and, you know, digital key management and all of those sorts of things set up? Or would I rather just hand that off to a service provider and say, hey, I'm willing to pay you a monthly fee per mailbox. Can you just go manage all of that for me?
Yeah, just make this happen.
Just make it happen, right? You want to be able to hand it off, let them do the work. They can now decide, hey, does it make sense for us to run it in our data center on our Exchange infrastructure based on whatever the client needs are? Or might this be better served running out of the Office 365 environment?
Right. And they kind of have a choice to do that either way.
Well, they can do either way. Or what we're seeing in some cases is there's a hybrid that ends up getting in place. So they've got certain mailboxes for whatever reason need to be run on sort of a dedicated Exchange environment.
Right.
And then other users that can run it Office 365.
I'll tell you, in working with bigger customers where I've been helping them get to the cloud like this, I have never gotten totally to the cloud. It's like hybrid forever. There's always a few mailboxes for various reasons that stay behind.
Absolutely. And I think that's really the exciting space with the service providers.
Sure.
It's getting them to think a little bit differently about where do you play in the value chain? What is your sort of opportunity to add value to your customer? And it's starting to be more service-centric. How do I deliver more of a managed service versus a self-service?
Yeah, putting more service in service provider. I kind of like that.
Absolutely. Moving from hoster to service provider.
Now, there's an element here, and I'm going to make a call back to Dave again. That site recovery thing, you know, I did that as a consultant. And one of the reasons that I did it was because most organizations will only ever do it once and may never use it, you know, knock on wood, where I was building 3 or 4 or 6 of them a year. So I was way better at it than most people. I just had a lot of practice. The other part was that when a disaster struck, you got a call. You sort of dropped everything and pitched in because you had done it before. You were a little less panic struck. You know, we'd gone through this routine before. I could see how a service provider could play into that, although it's much more a consulting role.
Absolutely. And I think that's sort of where we're seeing this interesting collision occurring in the market, where we've got the traditional hoster becoming a service provider on one end. Mm-hmm. And then on the other end, you've got the systems integrator who's used to doing a lot of this work, maybe on a project by project basis, recognizing that, hey, perhaps I transition my business into delivering this as a service and delivering it as sort of a monthly fee-based environment.
So less working by the hour and more working by the, you know, being paid by the month.
Absolutely. And what you'll find is that some of these service providers are willing to offset some of the upfront costs, especially in the email space. You know, perhaps they'll do the migration for free in exchange for then that long-term management contract to sort of manage that environment, either in their data center or in Office 365.
Sure. Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And I can't imagine running your own Exchange implementation for less money than you would pay Office 365. As long as the numbers are below tens of thousands. Like, I think the economies make sense when you get to a certain scale. I mean, I'm going to hope, maybe it's not true, but it's the smaller sizes. It's really tough to get comparable service.
Well, and I think even when you start to look at the larger size, you have to sort of make a decision that says there's a dollars and cents piece, but then there's also where am I investing my people resources? Because there's a finite amount of capacity that I can bring on in terms of people to run the business.
Right.
is running something like email core to my business? And part of what I encouraged customers to look at is to say, is this thing that you're doing something that's core and a competitive differentiator? Or is this something that you do truly just need to consume as a service? And there's a number of those scenarios, email being the obvious one, right, that says, yeah, chances are it's not core or differentiated. I just need it to work.
Yeah, you need it to work the same way you don't generate your own electricity.
Exactly.
Hey, Barnaby, give me 1 second here to pay the bills, because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by Royal TS, the comprehensive remote management solution on Windows, OS X, iOS, and Android. Whether you're using RDP, VNC, SSH, or even web-based interfaces for remote management, Royal TS has you covered. Royal TS for Windows can also be used for common remote management tasks like executing PowerShell scripts, managing Windows services, and much more. With Royal Server, you can even do this on OS X, iOS, and soon Android. Free to download for up to 10 connections, or use the coupon code RUNASRADIO for 30% off an individual user license at royalapplications.com/RUNASRADIO. So tell me a little bit about the Microsoft Cloud Solution Provider Program. So is this something that me as an ISP should be reaching out to you on and sort of figuring that out?
So I would say, yeah, absolutely. The Cloud Solution Provider Program is a program that we've had in place for a couple of years now. We continue to expand it. So we now cover Office 365, Azure, CRM Online, and Enterprise Mobility Suite. So all of our first-party cloud services are eligible under the CSP program. It is a program that a service provider can reach out to Microsoft. They can reach out to me if they're in Canada, or they can visit the website. And we can certainly get them hooked up with that program. And what that'll allow them to do is now start to offer their own package service or their own managed service, taking advantage of our underlying platform. And whether they expose that platform to the end user or not becomes a decision that they can make as to how they're building the solution. So if we think about a traditional hoster, one of the scenarios that becomes very interesting is, how do I leverage Azure for bursting capacity?
Right.
I've got a number of service providers that say, hey, we've got a great infrastructure, but you know, I can't afford to have it sitting idle just to be available for bursting. So I want to run it pretty loaded, right? 80, 90% utilization. But if I do now have a customer that says, hey, I need another 500 VMs for the weekend, how do I satisfy that?
Sure.
Now they can spin that up on Azure, make use of that. The beautiful part is, the customer may or may not even know that that service provider is taking advantage of capacity from Microsoft. As long as the service provider is aware of all of the restraints and rules that the customer has in place around data locale and privacy, mm-hmm, and whatever else is agreed to, they can spin it up in Azure, consume the resource, let the customer do what they need to, and then spin it back down again. All the customer sees is one bill from their service provider. On the back end, Microsoft will bill the service provider for whatever they've used. We'll break it down so that they can accurately account for what was used on behalf of each customer. And now that just becomes part of the service. In that scenario, the customer may not even realize they've been burst out to another cloud provider. In other cases, we look at this backup as a service or DR as a service. It may just be part of the solution that the service provider offers to their customer. They may or may not directly see that, hey, it's Azure Site Recovery that's being used behind the scenes as the enabling technology,
right,
to allow for this functionality.
Yeah, and I can also see that you would start to prioritize different elements of your business. Like, you know, often you're going to get it when you get outside of the US to certain other countries. You want to have stuff in country. So maybe you're, as the ISP, just continue to do the data storage side, but you offload the web service work, because that nobody really cares where that is. It's far less sensitive, and the elasticity of the public cloud makes life a lot easier for that. But that sensitive part, the data, you know, you continue to provide that as a unique service.
Absolutely. And I think you also, you know, you mentioned sort of this globalization piece. Mm-hmm. One of the other interesting scenarios is, when I look at traditional hosters, they're very much driven by where they have physical presence. I have a data center in Toronto. I maybe have a data center in Vancouver.
Yep.
Typically, I'm going to serve a Canadian market. Well, it's very difficult to grow beyond that market if you're not willing to invest capital to go acquire facilities or space in someone else's data centers. With Azure and the public cloud and the CSP program, now you can really expand your footprint globally that says, hey, I want to pick up a customer in the UK or in Asia. there's Azure points of presence in all of those locations. I can simply extend my service, leverage that infrastructure. And again, to my customer, do they know whether it's sitting in my data center or it's sitting in a data center that's local to them? All of that becomes hidden behind the actual service that that service provider is trying to offer. So great opportunities to grow their business beyond the borders that perhaps have constrained them in the past with those capital costs.
Now, this approach seems to be the bigger organization who has a group of customers. They have a good billing system in place. They probably have existing infrastructure. They're just looking to the future. But it also seems to make sense to come at it the other way. More, if this was still my business, and I'm used to doing consulting, to start bringing in a services part of my business and maybe use the Azure product as the billing part of it as well.
I think there's a number of different scenarios. I mean, if we start to think about what are maybe some of the non-traditional areas, I think you could very quickly get to the scenario that says, you know, the web development community, those folks mm-hmm. that are, you know, perhaps agencies building out websites for customers. You know, the traditional model is I go to my agency, they build all of the assets, and then they hand me this big pile of stuff that I've then got to go host somewhere.
Now, you know, when I'm old enough to remember when the only way you could get a website built is if that provider also deployed the website for you too. But then it went away because it became a commodity business. It was such low margin that anybody who doing a value add, like real good creative, just didn't want to do it anymore. You feel like that's coming back? Because the cloud?
I think there's the option for that to now come back.
Interesting.
Because I think what you start to look at is historically, the model that you talked about, well, hey, I had to have my own servers, I had mm-hmm. to have capacity, I had to manage all of that infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Now we look at what's available in Azure with some of the platform as a service elements. I can simply take that code, check it into my source repository, it's now automatically uploaded to an Azure website. And now I can run that and simply bill the customer for it. I don't have to worry about the mechanics of maintaining the website, updating the underlying infrastructure bits. I just focus on making sure the content's fresh.
Right.
So it really opens up some interesting new opportunities to perhaps revisit some of those businesses that maybe didn't make sense before when you were responsible for doing all of the work. Now, if you can offload it, you can focus on the real value add and not the lower level pieces.
If you're a service bureau like that, and you're now tying into, say, an Azure website and so forth, you can polish that process so that you can deploy those features really quickly. Like, this should be able to allow me to provide better service to my customers, less time, less money.
Absolutely. You know, now we start to think about, you know, real-time edits. The customer comes in and says, hey, I need this thing changed on the website.
Right.
Once you go through the approval process for the creative piece, great. The website, the HTML has been updated. There's new code. There's no images, new creative. That all gets checked into your repository. That can instantly be available on the web. And again, taking advantage of that global presence, now we've got global content delivery networks that can ensure an awesome experience, regardless of where your end user happens to be hitting that website from.
Yeah, none of that stuff actually matters. And like I said, it is becoming commodity. So, you know, the fact that you could use a service provider that would provide you an end-to-end solution and just get a bill each month for that piece, which I guess is we can build a little margin into the service provider for that as well. So, I mean, that's pretty compelling. It's just a new line of business for you.
Well, it's maybe to put it a slightly different way. I mean, there's the commoditization piece, but if you think about it slightly differently, I think what's really happening is a more of a democratizing effect, mm-hmm. right? If I think back, you know, 10, 15 years ago, if you were a startup and you wanted infrastructure, you went out and spent a lot of money buying infrastructure just to get your idea off the ground.
Right.
Now, I can go out to any of these public cloud providers, try out my idea very quickly, and hey, if it takes off, fantastic. I've got revenue coming in the door, hopefully, to offset the costs that I'm spending on that monthly basis. So I've now sort of moved that access to infrastructure, access to technology, is now democratized. I've taken the risk away from the customer, and I've moved it back onto the big players, right? Who holds all of the risk here? It's Microsoft.
Sure.
We're the ones that are spending billions of dollars building out data centers. Yes, we want to attract customers into it, but we've offloaded all of that risk from the customer to say, use it as you need.
And this works well with that scenario of I want to penetrate a new market. So the fact there's already a data center there and I can just take advantage of it for a fee at a little bit at a time, you know, get gradually pregnant, so to speak. And if it works, then you pour, you know, you'll use more, it'll make more, it'll keep going, as opposed to having that big upfront cost right off the bat.
Absolutely. But I think the other interesting part, if we think about, you know, what does this mean now to the IT guy? What does this mean if I'm an IT pro working in a business? You kind of think, you know, am I hearing that my world's changing, my role's disappearing, they no longer need someone to manage servers? You know, part of the answer to that could be, yeah, that may be where this all ends up. But the flip side of that is to say, now you can start to have these really interesting conversations that say, I don't really care about the minutia of, is the server up and running and is it patched and is it current? Now let me look at this overall architecture and how would I architect a globally distributed application? How do I focus more of my effort on making sure that our DR strategy actually works and is tested versus, is this server up to date and is it patched? Start to focus at that higher level.
Right. And I think this is the conversation I have over and over again with IT folks when they're looking at the cloud, saying, is this taking my job away? It's like, it's just making it more interesting because you can now work on these bigger picture items. Do you know the other group of people that I think kind of need a home these days are the, remember the small business server product? Mm-hmm. And there was a bunch of folks that made their living taking care of 6 to 10 customers with all their SBS needs. I'm just thinking in that small form factor, the fact that that kind of personality could go to a company and present, you know, cloud solutions that way as well.
Absolutely. I think those sorts of folks can now go in and say, you know, if we look at what was in SBS, you had email, you had file storage, maybe some SharePoint. Now you could recreate all of that as a small business consultant, grab one of the SKUs from Office 365, potentially put some web components in through Azure, do all of the backup from the laptops and the PCs up into Azure storage. Now, all of a sudden, you've got this great compelling story, which isn't reliant on a server sitting under the desk somewhere in a small business.
Sure.
It's accessible from anywhere.
Well, and I remember when we did shows on Run As well, this back when SBS was still a product, about they got good at enough at remote administration. The most part, their customers would simply contact them via email and they would log in remotely, do their work and keep going. Like all of that's super doable in the cloud.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, now what it says is I don't really care where I am. I can log in remotely. I can access that Azure service from anywhere on the planet, do whatever administration my customer may need, and away they go.
Is the product stack complete? Is there everything that's on Azure and Office 365? Is that all stuff I can get through the Cloud Solution Provider Program?
Today, not 100%. I would say probably 97% of what most customers need is available through the CSP program. And I'm specifically thinking about the Azure side of things.
Right.
I would say probably 97% of what most people need. So in terms of infrastructure as a service, platform elements, identity, Azure Active Directory, all of those core components are definitely available. And that continues to evolve at the pace that we're evolving Azure, which is incredibly quickly.
See, I could see you want to start a brand new business, machine learning for hire, right? Get set up with a cloud solution provider, learn how to use all those tools, step into a company as a server provider, do their machine learning for them and bill it by the month.
Absolutely. I mean, you sort of hit on one of the topics that I like to talk to partners about, which is sort of that whole big data, IoT. If I'm a small business, that stuff sounds really sexy and really exciting.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's in every CIO magazine these days. Like if you say machine learning, people sit up and look at you.
Absolutely. But if I'm a small business, you kind of go, oh, wait a minute. I don't know the first thing about, you know, the R language or anything to do with data science and how I'm figuring it out.
Dude, I don't know that anybody knows. You know, that's the joke. The way I've heard machine learning described these days is like teenagers having sex, all talking about it, don't know if anybody's actually doing it.
Well, so I think you're spot on in terms of the opportunity for a partner to jump into this space and say, hey, we're going to be the preeminent service provider that really understands how you make sense of this data. We've got a couple of data scientists. We'll now offer our services for hire. We'll manage all of the back end. We'll bring the data in. We'll analyze it. We'll give you insightful information, all for this nice low monthly fee.
Sure.
And all of their risk has been offloaded to Microsoft. Yeah, hey, terabytes of data? We'll go do that.
Yeah.
No problem.
You suddenly realize this is an important piece of net. Well, machine learning is such a perfect load for the cloud because so much of the analysis piece needs a huge amount of compute for burst amounts of time and then it winds down. So it's an awesome workload for the cloud. But just that skill set and in some ways coming in as an external with fresh eyes to the business would make you super effective. It's just looking at everything new and seeing where the connections were.
Well, absolutely. I think that's the interesting part with the big data space is in some cases you can be too close to it and you're absolutely trying to find relationships. I think it works best when you can almost step back and say, here's a bunch of data, go tell me what's going on. And you start to find these really interesting things that you weren't looking for and you had no idea that those relationships existed.
100% agree. So Barnaby, where do I send folks if they want to get involved in this?
I would say the easiest thing to do is if you go to aka.ms/cloud solution provider.
Great. And I'll include that link in the show notes for folks to take a look at it. Thank you so much for your time. The half hour just flies by.
Hey, Richard, I appreciate it. And maybe let's not leave it quite so long before I come back and do another Run As Radio.
I think you better oughta. Thanks again. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.